हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करभावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवत्सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. Okay, so then Bhakti Sandarbha Adhyayana 2 Adhikarana 1, Bhakti is all auspicious, removes all sins and their reactions. So then we're on the purport of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he's talking on the Nectar Devotion, verse 1.1.22. Quote, it was understood that the low birth of the dog-eater is the cause of the disqualification for performing sacrifices. The sinful reactions by which he attains such low birth in this life is called the Prarabdha sin. Right? So he's pointing out that it's not that the cause of disqualification is the birth, and that birth is because of the sin. Like that. So unless that sin is removed, that level of sin, then you won't get, then they won't be qualified. So basically speaking, that bhakti can remove that. That's why they can become qualified. You know, so that's the principle is there. That's because of devotional service. And then, you know, for us, means on the Bhagwat platform, then anyway, they're purified, but you know, they don't need to, you know, they don't need to establish anything or anything. And so just by, they may see like Haridas Thakur and that, then they'll just carry on as a, you know, simple devotee. But when you're working with the, you know, the more kind of like organizational element of the Sankirtan mission, then that works very well. You know, means the Uttamas don't require the structure, you know, either of the Pancharatra or the institution. But because it's a preaching mission, you're preaching to conditioned souls. Therefore, it's very natural to have both the Pancharatric lifestyle and the institutional structure. And so then in that, from the Pancharatric, the body changes, you know, I mean, due to devotion, they can qualify for the Pancharatric initiation. So bhakti has eradicated the sins. And then from the Pancharatric, the body is changed. So therefore, no one can complain about the, you know, the low-born body. And so then they can get the Upanayanam, they can get the second initiation, they can therefore take part, you know, with training in the sacrifices. And that, so, you know, that's the point is that the point being made is not the point about they can do sacrifices. It's about bhakti purifies them so they can do pure sacrifices. So bhakti can purify that. So the reason that in the Vedic system they don't do that is that the Vedic system doesn't have the power to purify you outside of up to the level of liberation. You know, and that point is then you'll be back anyway. So only bhakti has the power to take you beyond. And that karma and jnana can even get you through the cycle of dharma, artha, kama, mokshas anyway because of bhakti. So that's the thing. Bhakti is the, you know, the outstanding, exclusive, all auspicious, you know, it removes all sins and their reactions, process, right? So then continuing with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It should be understood that their reason for performance of sacrifice is only because of fear of rumors created by people ignorant of the devotional scriptures. Right? So he's saying about the like he said about here, he said before. Okay, let's just start at the beginning. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur here, yet. Yogyatva, or qualification, means the essential nature which qualifies a person for performing sacrifices. One should not say, quote, if that low-born person really has qualification for sacrifice, why does he not then perform sacrifices? Right? This implies that he is actually not qualified. That's what they're trying to say. He's not doing, if you say he's qualified, but he's not doing them. So in actuality, he's not actually qualified. That's why he's not doing it. So, but then the Acharya points out, he does not do sacrifices, not because he's not qualified, but because he does not have faith in such actions, since he's endowed with pure bhakti, right? So he doesn't have to be doing all these standard yajnas and everything that everybody's doing, you know, the Brahmins are doing, because he doesn't, they're not necessary for advancement in spiritual life. Because bhakti being complete itself, the chanting of the holy name, includes all other processes. So he has no need for anything else. So that will be the position that's there. And so we'll see is that the acharyas, the great personality, uttamadhikaris, they don't even bother. It means they could, but as we see is in this case, you know, the institute, they don't, like we were saying, like Haridas Thakur and others that may be there. So he, you know, sets the example in that mind, that situation. Then he goes on. And other householder devotees born in high families perform these actions only to teach the common person not to abandon duties, though they too have no faith that these actions have any value, because they also have that firm faith, the Drudashrata. And so therefore they don't care. But they do it because without performing duties, then everything falls apart. As Krishna mentions in the Gita, that if he didn't perform, he has no need to perform duties. But if he didn't, no one else would, right? Because as soon as they say, oh, we're devotees, we don't need to do, we see the problem come up is that the special neophytes especially, but there can be also misunderstanding amongst the Madhyamas, you know, not a full understanding of this point. And so then they don't get involved in any of these Vedic, you know, how you say, practices, you know, the Dinacharya, the samskaras, any of these kind of things, because they think, oh, we're devotees, we don't need it. At the same time as whatever is their conditioning, they're happy to engage that in Krishna's service, but not using the Vedic formulas, right? So it's because of conditioning they have to use that. So the idea of duty, which comes up from goodness, then is not maintained, and people fall back to living a lifestyle of passion and ignorance. So, you know, outside of the direct activities of, let's say, Prabhupada's morning program, or if they're doing a service that's directly connected, like Sankirtan or something like that, then the tendency is they'll drop back to passion and ignorance, whatever is their drive for going to work, whatever is their drive in family life or community life, then will be coming from that aspect of passion, ignorance. But because they're devotees, they'll be in a more purified state. So it will happen, you know, there'll be more of a touch of goodness in there and that, but it won't be based on duty. So that's going to be the weakness, right? So it'll be passion, ignorance mixed with some goodness, right? Because no mode will be pure in itself on the material platform. You know, so then, thus the Gita says, by prescribed actions as well as hearing, Janaka and others attain realization of Atma, right? So realization of Atma means the supreme Atma, or Krishna, and us as parts and parcels of Atma, we're also called Atma, right? If I have a big chunk of gold and I take a piece off of that, it's still called gold. But the point is it's coming from the big chunk, right? So the same way as Atma means Krishna, and then, you know, as Paramatma, as Brahman, then in that situation, and we, the Atma, having expand from the feature of Krishna, you can say, as Godhead, then in existing in the Brahman reality, you know, whether it's the spiritual world, which will be the pure reality, or the covered reality of the material world, which is also Brahman, but we're seeing it as something separate. But the point is, when you see actually that connection and all that, and we're part and parcel and servant, that you have an actual realization of Atma, right? Thus, just with the consideration of setting example for others, you should perform work, right? Bhagavad Gita 3:20, right? So this is a karma yoga. So Krishna is showing how the karma is engaged, but the karma is not the important part. It's the medium for expression, right? You know, just like you give a gift to somebody, it's not the gift that's as important as much as the relationship and the thought that, that is there in making that arrangement, you know. And then, you know, the gift is something that's nice, that'll be pleasing, but it's more about the arrangement, you know, the relationship, right? So the same way, as he pointed out, for some devotees, we see is they take that aspect. They don't need to get involved in all these elements. And so they just stick to chanting and all that because of their faith. And for the householder devotees, then they also don't have the faith in these things, only in the holy name, like we see the Paramahamsas. But they are engaged in these aspects because of setting an example. So if he's coming in this high-grade Brahmin family, he has a circle of his own family and all the relatives and communities, he'll be doing those things that they do. You know, that's not against Vaishnava principles. But generally speaking, all the Brahminical stuff is generally all right, you know, especially if you see it in the proper mood and everything. So they'll be doing more of the extended, you could say, Vedic elements. Now, if they're from Brahminical Pancharatric backgrounds, you know, let's say like the Shris or Madhvas or others, then you're going to see is that the performance of the Pancharatric, they can't actually complain that they can't be involved, right? If they're just Vedic Brahmins, then, you know, they can say all these different things. And so the householders would do, and those who are not Brahmins and not household, they don't need to get involved. But for those in the Pancharatric, then naturally, they would be doing these activities, you know, at like the Brahmins would, but at the same time as those who are not Brahmins, and that they could also be involved in these because that's the nature of the power of devotional service and the Pancharatric formulas. But we don't necessarily see that if there's too much of a connection with the Vedic culture and those values, the Varnashram becomes a very important part, which I think for the Shris, they interpret Dasyam in the nine processes of devotion as engaging your Varnashram position in the Lord's service, right? So for them, that's what it means. But we see Rupa Goswami, Nectar Devotion, doesn't interpret it that way. I mean, doesn't reveal it in that way. He points out that this is not how we look at it. It's a matter of dasya means the mood of service, that you want to do service to please the Lord. That's the mood. And then if whether you're engaging Varnashram or not, that's the secondary. In other words, Varnashram doesn't become a primary element. That's his whole point. It's not like one of the 64 items of devotional service. It is a secondary religious activity where you're connecting it. So it's perfectly fine. So externally, it'll look the same. But for the Gaudiyas, then no, it's the attitude of that service of the Lord, and that with time will mature into friendship with the Lord and Atmani Vedanam. So for us, then it takes on the mood of the neophyte, then I'm the servant, the mood of the Madhyama, then I'm friend, and then preach nicely in the mood of the Uttama, where that complete surrender. So we're seeing it that kind of formula. So yes. And yeah. So therefore then we see is that the faith in the holy name and all that is their main thing, but they do this because of the social elements like that. And we see with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because he wanted to establish, because people don't understand much of the time, especially amongst the smartas and all that, they won't understand the position of the Vaishnava and that Brahminical platform. But even members of some of the other Vaishnava groups, because of that kind of more connection with the Varnashram, they may also have a misunderstanding or a slight misgivings about those who are not Brahmins by birth, that they would be involved in Brahminical rituals and all that. So to just clear all that, and then of course you have the Bengali Brahmins, the caste Goswamis, who then, you know, their whole thing is birth. That's all they got. You know, at least the smart as they can do those rituals. They are doing those rituals. But for the caste Goswami, we may or may not see much that's going on like that, you know, on a daily life. Yeah, so we won't get into that. So then he establishes that that because of the Pancharatrik initiation, they qualify now to take the Upanayanam. As we mentioned, there's a cutoff time. You have to be, by the end of the 15th year, you have to get Upanayanam. So if you're older, you didn't get it, then of course you're going to miss out, because we see, as we mentioned before, in the Vedic, if there is a proper mood like that and someone actually understands the Vedic system, then like Gotama, you know, offering to Satyakama Jabala, then he gets Upanayan because he's actually qualified and acting as a Brahmin. But we see within the system, not so many understand that. But here, as we're talking about the general preaching, you can say the bulk members of the society joining aren't joining early enough that by 15 they could get Upanayanam. Therefore, they're going to be a past that time and they can't get it according to the rules. So, but by Pancharatrik, now it's a new birth, therefore they can get, right? So then you're not connecting the body with the birth, you're connecting the body with the birth of initiation, right? The Tweeja, that's the whole thing, is the Tweeja has the power to give the new position. And so then if you're qualified for Tweeja, then naturally Dweeja is part of the package. And so for many of the Vaishnavas, like we see the Paramahamsas, they didn't worry about it. They weren't Grihasthas. Grihasthas, then, you know, it's the thing they do. But for the preaching mission, for the institution and for the preaching, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established, no, they get Pancharat, they get the Upana, and they wear the thread. And so we're wearing the thread, actually showing the power of bhakti to remove all, you know, all sins and reactions. That's why we're there. So we wouldn't use the Vedic thing is that, you know, then, you know, we don't wear the thread and all that. We would use it from the Pancharatrik. So for us, we're wearing the thread. It's actually a Vaishnav chinna, right? For the Brahmins born in a Brahmin family and got Upanayanam before, it's not. It's showing their Brahminical position and the purity like that. But for the devotees who've gotten it through second initiation, it's actually Vaishnava Chinna. It's actually, you know, a symbol of that. Just like they, you know, yeah. So, and they have the Sika because they're Vaishnavas, not because they're Brahmins. So, therefore, all those things, even though in the Vedic sense, they wouldn't necessarily be Vaishnava Chinna for the followers of the Pancharatrik, and that it is. It's there because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established that point that this is, we wear, and so we're establishing that's the minimum they should accept Vaishnavas at. It's Brahminical, even if they don't understand the Vaishnava position, but at least if they expect and respect them as you know, qualified as Brahmins, then that's good enough, as we saw from, you know, that point of Bhakti, of Sridhar Swami. Where was that? Where did he explain that? That's the far out thing about these things, is that you never find. Oh, yeah, it's always right there. It's at the top of the page. Sridhar Swami says, being immediately qualified for sacrifice means that he is given the respect due to qualified persons, right? So that would mean any Vaishnav who is received, even if he hasn't been trained and is not doing, he should be getting the respect due to a person who is able to do sacrifice. So that means the Vaishnav being immediately qualified means immediately he's qualified to receive the respect due to a person who is able to do. Now, to do those sacrifices as the Brahmin who then, you know, took second birth and then was trained to do the sacrifices. He, having now received second birth because of the third birth, then now gets training, and then he can perform the sacrifices. But Sridhar Swami is pointing out, before he gets to the point of doing sacrifices, he's already qualified to be respected on that level, like that. Okay. So then continuing, it should be understood that their reason means the grihasthas, you know, who are performing, the household of devotees who are performing these, sacrifices and that. It should be understood that their reason for performance of sacrifice is only because of fear of rumors created by people ignorant of the devotional scriptures, right? So and why would they be worried? Because you could say, oh, but, you know, we don't worry about any of that kind of stuff like that. And that's only if it's Vedic. If it's modern, you see everybody is seriously worried about it. Oh, the Washington Post said this or that, or no, it's a matter of the point is that the karma, it's effective in elevating the consciousness of the living entity because it has the stipulation in it. You're supposed to associate with other elevated personalities, right? When you do your sacrifices, when you do these different programs, then you have to have qualified Brahmins or saintly persons or like that to be involved. And so then you would invite qualified persons, qualified Brahmins. So now if the common person, because of these rumors or because of these others, because they don't accept the devotees as, you know, elevated and all that, on that platform of Brahmins, they wouldn't be inviting them. And so then where's their opportunity to apply that position they have to preaching to others? Because no one would want to listen to them. I remember hearing one gentleman, you know, some, I think it was Bengali, you know, from a Brahmin background, who knows how much they practice or not. He didn't look like someone who was, you know, regularly practicing. But he didn't want to accept, you know, so much of the instruction and that from our Gaudiya line, because we have so many members of the Gaudiya line, didn't appear in Brahmin families. And so he was not impressed, you know, because he being a Brahmin, you know, born Brahmin, that only he can only hear from Brahmins and stuff like that. So that's why we see is that in the tradition, much of the time, those who are gurus and this and that also would be from Brahminical families and all that. But because that way, everybody will accept, right? If the devotee is from a Brahmin background and he comes at the point of being a guru and he's giving initiation, then no one will complain. Like, you know, they may have complained about they don't like Gaudiyas or this, but they can't complain about the principle he's doing that, because of their ignorance of the devotional scriptures. So therefore, if someone's from a Brahminical background, and because of this, even their devotees, then generally, traditionally, we would see they would take initiation from somebody from that kind of background, like that, just because of their community and that. But nowadays, how many people are involved in their community? You know, so there's not a problem there. And then anybody who's not from Brahminical background, it doesn't matter, you know, because of that community thing. But when you're looking on the you know, but if they have that understanding and all that, then it doesn't matter, because that's the whole point. We see Advaitacharya, you know, set the example that when it came to the Shraddhapatra, or there's another name for it, means that, you know, it's the main offering is then given to the most qualified person. Because, see, when the Shraddha Patra, it doesn't mean it's after being offered in Shraddha it's given. It means that having been offered to the Lord, it's first offered to this person, because they're the one that's most qualified to honor the remnants of the Lord. And that then, those remnants, then through them, you know, by the arrangement, universal arrangement, then is taken to the Petris. So then, you know, you're going to have, and because in the Petri Puja, you know, why it's specific on Petri Puja, this wasn't just any old puja, you know, or it was just, you know, lunch at Advaitacharya's, and there happened to be a few Brahmins and Haridas Thakur there, and therefore he's serving him you know, giving the seat of honor. Because then there, you know, they could discuss so many different things. Well, he's a sadhu, he's this, he's that, he, you know, okay, that, you know, he's older than them, you know, something they could discuss and possibly accept. But in the Shraddha rites, the qualification for accepting the Shraddha on behalf of the forefathers is super qualified. Means basically everybody is removed except for a Brahmin who studies and teaches, you know, and who has that pure lifestyle of sadhana. Other than them, basically most all other Brahmins are removed from being able to accept. You know, if, and like an Ayurvedic doctor, he's a Brahmin, and that's a standard thing. He's not allowed to accept. Or he's a Brahmin, but let's say he's doing, you know, lawyer service and stuff like that, or he can't do. If he's doing, especially if he's doing business or if he's doing art or any, means Manu gives 3 pages of who's not qualified to accept. You know, he's taken up carpentry. He's this and that. So basically speaking, except for those who, you know, who are very, very, you know, proper in their community, which is not so many, most all others, you know, born Brahmins or even qualified Brahmins wouldn't be able to accept the Shraddha Patra. So that means the person who accepts has to be the most qualified. And then you're going to have, for that, you're going to only have invited those kind of Brahmins that are qualified. And he has a lot of them there by the sounds of it. And so but here, then Haridas Thakur, him receiving that honor means that he's the topmost beyond even the most qualified that are there, right? And Shantipur is very famous for its Brahminical culture and, you know, and all that kind of thing and their pride in being very qualified and all that. And so then he, by offering it to him, it's much more significant in that occasion than if it was just any other occasion, it's him and the Brahmins. But it shows that even their top qualification as Brahmins isn't as qualified as he is because of his Vaishnava position and his faith in the holy name, right? So that then makes that stand out. So we see is that's the whole point of that they, you know, that they want to be able to apply that. So him as the respected and senior most qualified Brahmin in Shantipur, if he does this, the others have to kind of like swallow it. They may like it, they may not like it, but they can't really complain because they know he knows the Shastra better than them. His performances are better than them. Everything about him is better than them, right? And that's just on the Brahminical platform. We're not even talking about that. Yes, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? That we're not that doesn't even come into the question when you're dealing with all these smartas and all that, right? So therefore, that's the point, is they can have effect, they can preach, they can do. So that's the fear, that they'll be ostracized. But otherwise, as far as not doing them, they're not worried about not doing them and not getting an effect. They're not worried if I don't do all these Brahminical sacrifices, then, you know, my life won't go well. And I my devotional service, they don't have any faith that it will give any real benefits on that platform at all. Its only benefit is that they're doing the Brahminical service to Krishna. As Krishna says, better to do your own duty than someone else's. Okay, continuing with the purport. Explaining that having qualification means being respected, just like a person who performs sacrifice, arises from a wrong interpretation of the text, right? They have ignorance of the devotional scribes. So they're saying that they should be respected like a person who performs sacrifices on improper, you know, understanding. It is incongruous with the actual text, right? The text says that the destruction of Prarabdha karma makes one qualified for sacrifice, not for being respected. They're even taking that side now. Okay, now they're accepting, okay, you can do the sacrifice, but you can't be respected for it, right? You know, so just like, let's say, that would make sense. that why when we go and we go through, you know, these, even in these areas where there's strong Brahminical communities, they don't bother us for doing the sacrifice. They may not respect us as, you know, as to be respected like them, but they don't say anything about our sacrifices, especially when we do them better than them, you know. That interpretation would be applicable in the case of jnanis who had some prarabdha karmas, which instigated such bad qualities like eating a dog once in this life, and then regained respect by performance of bhakti, which extinguished those temporary bad respects. However, happiness and distress are also seen in the devotee, even in the destruction of all prarabdha karmas. Happiness is one of the incidental results of practicing bhakti, it is said. Hari bhakti mahadevyas sarva mukyari siddhyayaha bhuktayas chad bhutas tasyas cheti kadvat anudrutaha. Footnote 6. The same verse is quoted in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.34, but there it ends with anuvrataha, and here is anudrutaha. Right, so yeah. All the perfections, such as liberation and wondrous enjoyments, pursue the great goddess of devotion to the Lord like maidservants. Okay, all the perfections, such as liberation and wondrous enjoyments, pursue the great goddess of devotion to the Lord like maidservants, Narada Pancharatra, right? So that means is that the whatever benefits are there from liberation and variety of wondrous enjoyments that can be had, they all follow as maidservants Bhakti Devi, like that. So footnote 7. This is quoted as verse 34 of this chapter, but it is also quoted in Priti Sandarbha. However, it is not in the present editions of Narada Pancharatra. That's the problem, is that different things get left out, or, you know, who knows what happens. So the acharyas are quoting from these verses of the scriptures that are there at that time that they have, you know, because many times they're written on palm leaves and all that. Someone then writing them again, you know, then adjust the word, or, you know, something like that, or, you know, someone in their commentary like that, or they get left out in the printings. And so that's why you're going to see, even in the critical, you know, editions, they show the different printings from this one and that one. But the point is because the acharyas have wrote it, we accept it, we use it, and anybody else wants to complain, we just don't care, you know, like that. That's just the thing, you know. Yeah. The distress experienced by the devotee is sometimes given by the Lord, not karma. Right? So he's pointing, it's not by karma. It's by the Lord. It's just there's something there that to get purified for. And so if we go through it with, you know, with an acceptance that, yes, because of my impurity in the heart, these things come up, and take it in that mood, you know, don't direct it as envy towards others or this or that, then we get purified. But otherwise, if we direct it at someone else, then instead of getting purified, we take on the bad karma of the person we're directing it towards. Right? I criticize someone, I take on the bad qualities of the person I criticize. So some bad result comes to me, and I say, well, it's got to be someone else's fault, right? Because it never is my fault, because I'm so fabulous, right? So it's their fault. So now, besides not purifying myself to the quality that I could have gotten by just humbly accepting it, now I'm also taking on bad qualities from the person I'm criticizing, right? So it's not a good policy, you know, for advancing devotional service, right? You know, social standing, this, that, you know, then, yeah, these things may come up, but it's still not a good process. Right? Then quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam, quote, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8. Sometimes, however, the suffering is a result of offense to the Vaishnavas, right? So that's another point, is that if you've offended Vaishnavas, then it can be a reaction to that. Or it can be that Krishna is giving some kind of unfortunate situation just to purify him and bring him up to, you know, get rid of the attachments to all these things, and so that one moves forward in one's Krishna consciousness. So that's there. We can see one is using it nicely in Krishna's service, and then there's no need to make any adjustments. But at the same, you know, time, that's generally the thing, because we see that from that example of Bali Maharaj, he took away everything because, you know, he had that the mood was not quite, or at least for the example, you know, that it was being set was, you know, he's the king of the demons, you know, he's taken over the heavenly planets, he's, you know, he's doing a, you know, demon king, you know, kind of stuff. But then afterwards, you know, so Krishna takes everything away. But then afterwards, he gives him that he in the next life, he'll be, means the next change of the Manu, he'll be the next Indra. But at the same time, until then, his opulence on his planet, I think he's on Sutala, will be more than what Indra has. Right? So that's the whole point, is that for the devotee, he takes away everything, but for the devotee, he can give more. And so in other words, he can take away more and he can give more. And so that in the beginning that he takes away, then that's going to be Krishna's mercy, because we have attachments to these things. By taking them away, then we, you know, we give up these attachments. But then as a more advanced position, then he can give so much and the devotee does not become distracted, right? That's the whole point. So he becomes distracted, then that's not the ideal. So the more advanced the devotee, the more they can deal with. And so that's the idea. Then they can set a nice example how to use all these things nicely in Krishna service, right? Because they have that mood and all. So that becomes nice. So then for Krishna, it can be either way. But then you have the offense to the Vaishnavas that will go in. So in other words, it's never from karma, right? For devotees, as Krishna probably calls it, Krishna karma. There is no material karma that's there. I mean, all that means, Krishna leaves, though it's his arrangement, the Prarabdha karma of having the particular body you have. Because if you took that away, then you wouldn't have this body. And then what are you going to do? You don't have your spiritual body. You don't have your material body. You're just 1/10,000th tip of the hair floating around. And anytime anybody sneezes, you know, you end up, you know, halfway down the road. Right? So therefore that much stays, but everything else you see is removed. So it's just, it's a, you know, just a, yeah. Okay. How are we doing? Okay. So then the next, nectar devotion verse 1.1.23. Padma Purane cha aparabdha phalam papam kutam bijam phalon mukam. Kramenaiva pralieta, no. Kramenaiva pralieta Vishnu bhakti ratatmanam. Okay. So then, also translation in the Padma Purana, also in the Padma Purana, it is said, for those engaged in bhakti to Vishnu, step by step, the aparabdha, kuta, bija, and prarabdha karmas are destroyed, right? So then this is always a very, this point is always has many interpretations of what's aparabdha, kuta, bija, and prarabdha, and many different explanations and this and that, trying to make a basic logic out of it. You know, but, you know, Prabhupada, how he says, you know, it's always the straightforward thing. That is what Rupa Goswami is saying. Srila Prabhupada. So it didn't say what we normally put. Oh, I see. Oh, because this whole thing is a commentary inside. Okay. Srila Prabhupada. It is stated in the Padma Purana, there are four kinds of effects due to sinful activities, which are listed as follows. One, the effect which is not yet fructified, right? That's the aparabdha. Two, the effect which is lying as seed, okay, bija. The effect which is already mature, and the effect which is almost mature. Okay. It is also stated that these four effects become immediately vanquished for those who surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, and become engaged in his devotional service and full Krishna consciousness, right? So that's the main point, is all four of these are removed by bhakti, while for the karma and jnan, they can only remove parts, a portion of this, enough that you can be successful in karma and jnan. But even that, the reason that even that is removed is because of bhakti. So in other words, removal of sins and their reactions and creating auspiciousness is only bhakti. And when you apply it in karma, then you start to get the effects of bhakti, and it takes it away to some degree. But because you don't have faith in bhakti, you think it's karma that's doing work. Therefore, bhakti only goes up to the point of getting the external result, or whatever is the result you wanted to get from your dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. And as soon as you get that, the bhakti then leaves, because then you think that you got it by the karma or by the jnana. And so even we can see is that technically, if you look at it, karma and jnana can't do anything auspicious or remove sins or their reactions for anybody. It's only the bhakti that is the driving force of it, that anything becomes a value, right? So that's the, okay, so here. So then we had not yet fructified, lying as seed, fecus is already mature, and what's almost mature. Okay, so then almost mature. So the fourth one, those effects described as almost mature refer to the distress from which one is suffering at present. And the effects, lying as seed, are in the core of the heart, where there's a certain stock of sinful desires which are like seeds, right? So that's the bija. That's the one that the others, the bhakti being applied in karma and jnana will never purify to the point of removing the seeds, because karma means you have material desire. Jnana means you have material desire, right? And material here is defined by 11th canto, of being that it's not about Krishna. So therefore it's material. It's about Krishna, it's pious. It's not about Krishna, it's impious. It doesn't matter how pious and recommended the activity in the material platform in karma and jnana, it's still impious and material. It's just a subtler form of material. The Sanskrit word kutam means that they are almost ready to produce the seed or the effect of the seed, right? So then you have produce the seed or the effect of the seed, right? So you're going to have these two features there. So this becomes the point generally at which there is a problem in the different understandings of these four, right? So kutaj then is the sprouting of the seed, right? Means, because in other words, it's a seed in the heart. When you act on that, the seed sprouts, right? Or you want to act, so the seed has to sprout. But at the same time, it's also said, when you act, it produces the desire to do that again. So in other words, the kutaj then sprouts, and it's going to turn into fulan muka, which is there almost ready. And then you get the results. But then the point comes is that it also produces the next seed. So this is the part that's generally not understood, is that the seeds come from acting in that way. And so the more you've acted and the wider range of things you've done, the more seeds are created. And so then, yeah. An immature effect. Okay, now it's just lying a seed. The effect is already almost mature. It refers to the case where the seedling has not begun. Right? From the statement of Padma Purana, it is understood that material contamination is very subtle. Its beginning, its fruition and results, and how one suffers such results in the form of distress are part of a great chain. When one catches some disease, it is often very difficult to ascertain the cause of the disease, where it originated and how it is maturing. The suffering of a disease, however, does not appear all of a sudden. It actually takes time. As in the medical field, precaution's sake, the doctor injects a vaccination to prevent the growing of contamination. The practical injection to stop all the fructifications of the seeds of our sinful activities is simply engagement in Krishna consciousness. Right. So then you're going to have, So that's the point. The main point is this, again, he's making it's very subtle, right? It's very subtle. So that means it's not just cut and dry, means because they're all connected together. Means you have the seed, you have the sprout, but you see, you still have the seed and the sprouts coming out of the seed, and then you start getting the leaves, and then, you know, so you have these different stages. And so it's all, each one is connected to the other. Also, then when he probably says, almost matures to the distress from which one is suffering at present. Right? So you're getting the distress, what's going on, but then you also have the external effect that's there. I mean, something happens to you, but then there's the distress. So you see there's two aspects. You drop a brick on your foot, that's the karma. But the point is the distress that comes from it, that's also part of it. You know, or it's about to happen. It hasn't quite happened. You know, you know you're in a dangerous situation. Nothing specifically has happened, but you're feeling the distress already before it's actually happened. And then something happens. You know, does that make sense? So that's going to be the thing, is that these are connected. So they're all part of the different subtleties of the elements here. But then we have next Srila Jiva Goswami, then his comment on this. This additional quotation from the Padma Purana makes clear the fact that bhakti destroys prarabdha karma. The word papam is the substantive, which is modified by words aparabdha, phalam kutam, bijam, and phalan mukham, right? So you have papa, right? So which is the results. I mean, papa is the sin, right? So that's the, then you modify that, you get the aparabdha, phalam kutam, bija, and phalan mukham, right? So then, yeah. This verse particularizes sinful reaction, right? Because people are worried about the birth. That's why we got into it. Most people are saying the birth. They're not looking at, is he a great person or is he a terrible person? Because otherwise they say, this guy's a Brahmin by birth. Therefore, he has the right to do the sacrifices, even though by character, he may be very bad. They only look at the birth. So that's the emphasis here is on the prarabdha karma, is that he's born in this family. It's the effect of a previous sinful activity, right? So, you know, therefore he's born in that situation. So that's the main one that's being pointed out. And so if that one goes, then everybody's happy. But we understand that even greater than that is the seed that causes those mentalities and desires and actions that therefore may culminate in the prarabdha karma of low birth or, you know, whatever else is there. Okay. This verse particularizes sinful reaction, right? Phalan mukham, approaching fruition, means prarabdha karma, literally commencing karma, right? Means approaching fruition, right? It means literally commencing karma. It's just about to happen, right? It's there. The sinful reaction presently being experienced in this life is happiness and suffering, right? So that's going to be your prarabdha karma. It's the phalan mukha. It's just about there, and then you know it opens just like the bud. It's there, and then it opens, but it's already there. Right, you can see it, you know. So you're born in that low grade family, therefore the results of that you'll get throughout your life. You know, it's just about there, it's just about to give. So that's why it says, well, Prabhupada's saying that aspect of almost mature. So that's that phalan mukha, right? Bija means the reaction which is about to become prarabdha, about to be experienced, and is in the form of impressions, right? So all the impressions that you have from previous actions, and results, that's then the cause of the beads. That means that's the seed, footnote 8. This can imply that in this life, the karmas are as bijas, are somewhat detectable in the mind as impending suffering, and later materialize as physical suffering called prarabdha karma, right? Because the impressions they give you, you have desires, you know, you get problems from that and all that, and that creates the problems that are there, your attachment to them and all that. So as we see, it's quite subtle. You know, they're likening it to a plant, right? The plant is a seed. Seed sprouts, seed grows into a bush that has, you know, almost ready to give, and then there's the fruits themselves, right? Kutaj refers to sinful reactions which are about to become bija. Aparabdha, phalam, means those reactions which are not parabdha. They are not to be experienced in this life at all, right? Okay, but that'll be future. But which cause effects in the form of kuta, bija, and parabdha, footnote 9, should be understood that here that all of these reactions are previously committed sins. These reactions progress from subtle to gross forms over many lifetimes. So here's on the aparabdha means what you won't get this life, right? It's going to be in the future life, right? But then you're going to get, what was it, what were you saying here is, bija means your action is about to become prarabdha. Okay, about to be experienced. It's in the form of impressions. Kutaj refers to simple action is about to become bija. Right? So you have the impressions, and then those, by acting on those, then that seed sprouts and that, you know, right? So it's the, is that, these aparabdha karmas have been acquired without beginning, anadi siddha, and are infinite in number, ananta, footnote 10. The karma is anadi, because the jiva's existence in the material world is anadi. Only a certain number of these mature at a certain time, and therefore the other varieties would not be infinite. In other words, aparabdha karmas are without beginning and infinite, but parabdha karmas are not, right? So in other words, aparabdha is all the things that will be experienced, and parabdha is the ones you're getting right now. You know, it's just like, let us say, all the prep meals and preparations, you know, and that you will have for your whole lifetime, right? Parabdha is the one you're eating now. Aparabdha will be the next meals, right? So you take it that at each lifetime there's going to be, you know, a meal, so that for us goes on and on and on, but the one that is focusing on right now, because it means you already have these things in the heart, so it's just a matter of you're going to move through, and there's natural patterns to move through, but because of the independent nature of the jiva that they have, they can choice that sometimes at particular points you're going with the one, and then it comes to a point where you could go this way or that way. You could continue with what's going on or do something else, and then you go there. So there's natural paths, and whichever one you take, you just move through that. In this work, aparabdha phala has been simply called aparabdha, illustrated in verse 20. Bija and parabdha were reckoned together previously in verse 21. Footnote 11. Since the bijas manifest as suffering in this lifetime, the two are offering simply classified as parabdha. Right? If in a previous lifetime I have committed an act for which I must suffer sickness in this life, the reaction is called bija until the time it manifests in this lifetime. Okay. Means, in other words, what's the reaction that you'll get is bija. And when you get it, then that's parabdha, right? When it manifests, the sickness is called parabdha. So parabdha is when it's manifest. And then the bija is going to be what's going to manifest, right? Okay. The remaining type, not yet discussed, Kuta reaction, may be included with the Aparabdha reactions, footnote 12. Thus, the experience in this body of suffering at the moment is called Parabdha, and the upcoming suffering in this lifetime due to karma is called Bija. It may be detectable on the mental level as a premonition before it happens. Right? You know, especially if you've dropped a brick and you've noticed that, oh, it's going towards my foot. There's a premonition of, you know, that something's going to happen. So the falling brick in that premonition is the bija, right? You know, and then when it hits your foot, then it's the parabdha. We're on 12, right? Thus, the experience in the body of suffering at the moment is called parabdha, and the upcoming suffering in this lifetime due to karma is called bija. It may be detectable on the mental level as premonition before it happens. If one were able to intuit circumstance of the next life, that would be called kuta. The undetectable karmas waiting for future lives will be called aparabdha. Right. So, in other words, as bija is to parabdha, kutaj is to aparabdha. Like that. That's the thing. So it means the kutajas, the bijas that haven't happened yet, because they're going to happen next life. Right. And so, or, you know, like that. Yeah. Does that make some sense? That's even, yeah, this is the, so far, the best explanation we've had yet of all this. You know, because it explains all of them, it's subtle and it also is logical, right? Kramena means, oh, how are we doing on time? Oh, okay, stop. We'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada.